Jared the GM live at Bridgestone Arena, NCAA tournament, though, to get you updated on. Belmont trails Maryland by 1 point with 9:25 to go in the game. Floyd has been very back and forth. And speaking of back and forth, Bradley is at the free throw line right now. Guy just missed a free throw. Bradley can tie it on this free throw with Michigan State. They trail 56-55 with 4:57 to go.
Good game.
How embarrassing would that be for Tom Izzo if they lose to a 15 seed for the second time in 4 years?
Yeah, that would, he would not be happy.
I mean, how many of those, even though for a Hall of Fame coach who's won a national title, how many of those do you have to lose before you get fired?
Oh, I would imagine.
You lose like three in a row, you might have to go.
I don't know. I would imagine he'd be able to lose a few before they get him.
A few is two. You know, I mean, would be the second one.
I don't think he's worried.
I wouldn't worry either, but I mean, at some point, you know, you got to stop losing to 15 seeds, or at least making it interesting. The Predators need to win in the playoffs. I think that's what everybody in this town believes one way or another. Adam Vingan at The Athletic has a very interesting breakdown of who the Predators are likely to play in the playoffs. And according to Adam Vingan, the Predators have essentially, according to Dom Lazuskin, whoever that is, according to his statistical model, the Predators have a chance of playing one or two teams. 100% chance of playing either the St. Louis Blues or the Dallas Stars. The reasoning behind that would be if you're the second team in the Central, you play the third team in the Central, which is either going to be St. Louis or Dallas. And if you win the Central, you play a wild card team, which is either going to be St. Louis or Dallas. So it's as simple as that. And Adam breaks it down against the two opponents. He breaks down the St. Louis Blues. Predators record against the Blues, 1-3-1. Vingan writes, quote, "The Predators and Blues seem destined to meet in the first round, and home ice advantage is still very much in play. The Blues, who are 5 points behind the Predators with one game in hand, also have one of the NHL's easiest remaining schedules. After reeling off 11 consecutive victories, the Blues have come back to earth, but they remain formidable." Talks about the goalie and how good he's been, and so on and so forth. The Predators and Blues currently occupy a similar space in terms of expected goal share, demonstrating how evenly matched the two teams are. The Blues wouldn't necessarily embrace a first-round matchup with the Predators, but they also wouldn't shy away from seeing them. Floyd, let's start with St. Louis before we get to Dallas, when they kind of break down the two teams. What do you think of that? What do you think of how it's almost 100% St. Louis or Dallas? And do you care which one it is, St. Louis or Dallas?
Yes.
Why?
I mean, I don't want to play St. Louis.
Even though they've come back down to earth?
I don't care.
The Predators have a 27% chance of playing the Stars in the first round of the playoffs, and they're 3-2-0 against the Stars. Why are you so much more in favor of playing Dallas than you are playing St. Louis? You beat St. Louis 2 years ago. St. Louis has come back down to earth since you last played
them. What was
the
record? 1-3-1?
1-3-1 in the regular season.
And 3-2 against Dallas?
And the one, I believe, for the Predators came when Mike Yeo was still their coach.
Yeah,
all the losses have come against Craig Berube.
That's probably the reason right there. You look at that record. I mean, I don't.
But the Predators owned the Jets last year in the regular season, and that didn't mean.
That didn't mean anything. I don't care about any of that stuff.
But then you're talking about the record
3 years ago, they really do. Who cares?
No, I'm talking about last year when they went into the Winnipeg series. The Predators had played well against them in the regular season, and they still lost. And now you're saying, I don't care about that. But your reasoning for not wanting to play St. Louis.
No, I don't care about anything that happened last year. I really don't care about anything that happened last week.
Then you shouldn't care about the 1-3-1 record in the
What other indicators do you have?
I think, to me, I mean, Dallas has star players.
Then play Dallas. You can have Dallas. I'll take Dallas. I want to play Dallas if you give me a choice.
Even
and
though they
you
have
can
Ben
have,
and Sagan. And,
you can have St. Louis.
And Ben Bishop and got we'll, hurt, but we'll, he's the number one goalie in the
we'll
league.
We'll see who finishes what.
I mean, they're going to get St. Louis in the first round.
Yes, they are.
The question is, are they going to get St. Louis here or are they going to get St. Louis there? And
I'm not sure it matters.
I'm not sure it does either. If they were to play, if they were to start the playoffs today, who would you take? St. Louis and Nashville. Game one tonight at Bridgestone Arena between the Preds and the Blues.
I would take Nashville.
How many games? And why?
No, it'd go seven. And it'd be right to the seven. I mean, that'll be how close it'll be, in my mind. That's tough. I mean, the first, we have to play St. Louis and we have to play Winnipeg.
No, done playing St. Louis.
Huh?
You're done playing St. Louis. Oh, you're talking about the playoffs?
Yeah.
You'd have to play St. Louis and then the winner of Dallas-Winnipeg.
Yeah, you have to play Winnipeg.
But like last year, Winnipeg got their first round matchup against Minnesota.
That could be tough.
And there was no prayer in my mind that Minnesota was going to get past Winnipeg in the first round. I think Dallas would have a legitimate chance to get past the Jets in the first round this year. Because the Jets have been just as up and down as you have been.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar in the way they've played and the way that we've played. But I'm sure they're saying, you know what, we'll take Dallas. That'd be a good reason to finish first.
I think that they probably look at Ben and Sagan and they look at Dallas and they think to themselves, hey, Dallas is pretty good. Here's what Vingan writes about how the Predators match up with Dallas. Quote, what better way to spice up the 2020 Winter Classic than to have its participants meet in the playoffs for the first time? The idea of a Predator Star Series is intriguing. It wasn't long ago that the Star CEO Jim Leitz referred to the play of star forwards Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin as blanking horse blank. I've never heard that, by the way. A team CEO on the record to say that about the star players. Anywho, since being called out, one day after the Stars notch a shutout victory against the Predators, Sagan has responded with 37 points in 35 games. Ben has 21 points in 32 games, very down by his standards. The Stars' greatest strength is their goaltending. Ben Bishop, who hasn't appeared in a playoff game since 2016, recently logged a shutout streak of 233 minutes and 4 seconds and has a 15.94 GSAA at 5-on-5, third highest among 52 NHL goaltenders with at least 1,000 minutes of playing time. Anton Hudobin flummoxed the Predators more than once this season, registering a 201 goal against average and a 949 save percentage in 4 games. Like, it just for me, I just think to myself, like, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters who you play. I think the question is, if the Predators team that lost to Anaheim shows up, you lose to the Blues in 5 games. If the Predators team who has beaten San Jose and has beaten Toronto shows up, you're probably up 2-0 going back to St. Louis against either of those two teams.
Right.
So the question is, what Predators team are we going to see?
That's exactly right. It's been the question all year long. Which one are we going to see? So I don't, you know. So you want to play St. Louis?
I don't know what I want. My thing is this, is I think that they'll take St. Louis more seriously. I think they'll take St. Louis way more seriously than they'll take Dallas. I don't want to say that I don't trust the mental fortitude of the Predators, because that's not the right way to say it. But I don't trust the mental discipline of the Predators. Like, I don't trust the Predators to go up 2-0 in a series and show up for game 3. I don't trust the Predators to show up tonight. I mean, every time you start to feel good about this team, they go out there and all of a sudden Ryan Johansson loses his guy and it's a goal and up, you're losing to Anaheim. So, I mean, if you told me the Predators were going to give their best effort in the playoffs, I would tell you that they would be in a dogfight in the second round with Winnipeg. But what have we seen this year that tells us that they're going to be able to do that?
So, playoffs start tonight, and you got to play one of those teams. Which team do you want to play?
St. Louis.
You want to play St. Louis.
Yeah.
You got St. that, Ian? Hold on to that.
St. Louis's roster does not have enough talent, in my opinion, to – like, Dallas has as much talent as you. I don't think St. Louis has as much talent as the Predators do. They've got Tarasenko, who's a high-end legit dude, but even Tarasenko hasn't really lit it up. Now, he's lit it up when he's played you, but he hasn't necessarily lit it up like he always does. Ryan O'Reilly's had a nice season, but outside of that, Jordan Binnington is still, in my opinion, a backup goalie until he goes out there in the playoffs and proves that he's more than that. And they've got a bunch of just run-of-the-mill guys, just regular guys. Dallas has high-end superstars. They have great players. So I think my gut tells me I'd rather play St. Louis. Now, you're just solely choosing Dallas because the Predators have gotten their butts kicked by St. Louis.
Yeah. I mean, they have a tough time playing St. Louis, in my opinion. And they don't have as tough a time playing Dallas. And Dallas is Dallas has got no fans.
Oh, yeah, so they don't care about that at all.
So home ice is not going to be a factor, whereas Winnipeg, think home ice will be a factor? Yeah, it will. So
was it a factor last year?
It will be this year, I'll bet you. Well, or if it's going to be a factor for us. I mean, I think it'll be however it turns out, one way or the other. But if we're going to, I mean, we can't say, hey, it's going to be a factor for us and it's going to be nothing for them because they've got a pretty good crowd too now.
I just don't know what to believe anymore. You know, you believe that maybe home ice matters and then it doesn't. You believe that maybe who you play in the playoffs will matter. But, again, I think it's solely based upon what Preds team goes out when they start the playoffs. I just don't.
Well, I mean, you know what? And that's the disturbing part. I mean, what kind of chance do you have to win when you don't know who's going to show? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, what kind of chance do you have to win? You got no chance. You don't even know what kind of team you're going to have. So
do they have the time to figure that out? Do they have the ability to figure that out?
You know, if they haven't figured it out after 72, I'm not sure 82 is going to make a difference.
It made a difference 2 years ago.
What about 7 years ago? Did it make a difference then?
I'm just telling you what everybody tells me that, it made a difference 2 years ago. You know, that is recent. That is this core. That is, everybody remembers that. It made a huge difference the last 10 games. So, again, I don't know. Let's ask the callers. Who would you rather see? Again, Adam Vingan breaks it down. Who would you rather see in the playoffs, St. Louis or Dallas?
So what did he decide?
He doesn't decide at the end. He just breaks it down. 615-737-1025. Your phones, 615-737-1025. Jared and the GM, we're live from Bridgestone Arena today. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Really feel good after the San Jose game. That was our best game in a long time. As we've discussed on the show the last few weeks here, it's just been some inconsistencies. But, not that I want to compare us to anybody else, but I noticed in the last 10 games we've been .500, St. Louis has been .500, and Winnipeg has been .500, all teams that are trying to get to the first spot in our division. So, again, the games are tough. The games are important. It's so close in the standings. But I was really happy with how we played in San Jose. It just seemed like a much better team game, fewer mistakes. I think in a lot of games we're actually playing pretty good in large segments of the games, but we've made the big faux pas, if you will, and turned the game around, usually for the other team, which has been kind of unfortunate.
Do you believe that David Poile really got behind that one San Jose game like that on the midday show and felt really positively about that? Or is that like a GM taking the most positive thing recently and kind of holding it up so that maybe they'll look at that and say, you know what, that San Jose game is the new.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's trying to sell the fact that, that 500 team, that's not us. This San Jose team, that's us. I mean, that's what you're trying to sell to your players all the time, that kind of stuff.
A win tonight will go a long way in that regard?
Sure. I think so. I mean, I think that would be ammo, little fuel to the fire.
Let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025. Crispy is going to join us coming up. Let's go to Bob, who's up next on the Preds. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Bob.
I think I'd rather play Dallas just because of the fact that they're not, I don't think that they're quite as physical as St. Louis. And remember, when we played the Blues a couple of years ago, Fiala got, that terrible injury, and, you know, I think it wore us down a little bit as we got. So I think I'd rather play Dallas just for that reason. I wanted to ask you guys your opinion. I really like the Sissons, Yarncroke, Smith line. And remember, Yarncroke, I think, was out. Wasn't he out against Winnipeg?
Last year in the playoffs, he was in and out, but he was never the same player that he was before he got the injury.
I think he's key, and I think that line is pretty good, and I like your opinion of that line. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I'd say this, and I've said this today, I think Peter Laviolette's in a really tough spot about what to do, especially because Kyle Turris, at least in the Athletic article over the weekend, made it known that he's not very happy with the situation. And David Poyle made it known on the midday show Tuesday that Kyle Turris is not very happy with his situation. So if you're Peter, you want to get Turris back into the mix, and you want to get him confident, and you want him to play on your second line, and he wants to play on the second line. But I think he's got to commit to that Sissons line of Sissons, Smith, and Yarncroke from here on out. He's really got to set the lines and give them a chance to gel because they haven't had the time to gel. And then I think with the other line, this is the other tough part, is if you do that, if you're committed to your first line and then that Sissons line, are you then also going to want to commit yourself to Bonino, Granlin, and Simmons? Because how much moving around can Granlin do and feel comfortable with the team when it comes to the playoffs?
Yeah, I think Simmons could probably handle it a lot easier.
Well, because his job is to go to the net, you know.
Well, and he understands the system a lot better. I mean, I'm sure Grantland's going to be a little bit tougher for him to do all that. But that's just me.
But the production hasn't been there from either one of them, so you almost want to give them the best chance to succeed. So keep them together and let them gel with Bonino and let them play. You know, Bonino's kind of one of your hybrid guys like Sissons or Yarncroke who can kind of play any style of game as a center. You know, he can play an offensive game, albeit he's not going to score, you know, a bunch of points.
Right.
But, and then if you do that, are you kind of stuck with your fourth line being what it is?
Well, yeah, but see, the hard part about sticking with the lines, and I understand what you're saying, but I think the thing that helped them a couple of years ago when they were in a similar situation was by changing up all the lines, when you start getting injuries, and we know there's going to be injuries, then when you throw a guy into the lines, no big deal. Oh, okay, yeah, we got it. Let's go. Those lines, you want to keep them together today, and I understand why. But you know what? Game three of the second series, somebody goes down, and now you're going to be changing every line. So I'm not sure it's one of those things that you can do and hold on to. You know, it sounds good, but, you know, when it comes to practice, I'm not sure it actually has much of a chance.
Do you think Peter will do, once they are comfortably in the playoffs, which will probably be next week, do you think that Peter then will do what he did 2 years ago where he switched it up a lot at the end and all of a sudden Zollner, Chuck, and Aberg are in games and we're like, why is Pontus Aberg in a game in which you're trying to fight for seeding? And then the next thing you know, Pontus Aberg is in game one against Chicago, and Pontus Aberg's producing in the Chicago and Anaheim and Pittsburgh series. I mean, do you think he'll do the same thing, or do you think he'll be so committed to getting these guys acclimated that he'll kind of hold pat on what he's got?
Gut feeling? He'll do what he did before. And I think that paid off. I mean, I think, again, when guys start getting dinged or aren't playing well and you've got to move guys around, which you know you're going to have to do, then there's not as much of a shock to the whole thing. And I think, too, you know, I think those guys, when they actually got into a game, were much better acclimated. Mm-hmm. You know, fine, all right, here we go. I kind of like that. And I would imagine that after – this is just me – you know, he gets to a point here where he feels really good about where they are. Hopefully, you know, win tonight and a couple of wins, and then finally you take that last two or three games or whatever the number is and say, okay, you know, get everybody in there. Let them play. Let them move them around.
I also feel like the one thing you got to be careful of, though, is if this Sissons line is still heating up you don't want to then break them apart at the end of the season and have them lose their sizzle a little bit. Because then you feel like a real dummy if you got to the playoffs and then you put them back together and they weren't doing jack.
Yeah, but
even if that's not why, you'd still feel like that's why.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that he's got a great deal of choice. I mean, I'm not sure he's got much of a choice, you know, because he's got to – I mean, we know – I mean, what are the chances of a line going into the playoffs and surviving every game? You know, it's not going to be great. I mean, there are going to be dings, or there are going to be dings to somebody else's line, which is going to affect yours, you know. I mean, that could happen too.
I'm trying to think of last year in the playoffs. I believe – the Predators' top three lines remained intact until Peter benched Fiala in game four of the Winnipeg series. But up until that point, obviously no one in the first line missed a game. Turris, Smith, and Fiala stayed together and did nothing. And then that third line, the Bonino, Watson, and Sissons line was fantastic. Now, the fourth line will fluctuate based upon the matchup or something like that. But I think last year they made it through their 14 games or whatever they played, or 13 games, without having like a mix one way or another. So I certainly think that that's on the table. So it just – I think it's a tough spot for Laviolette, because unless they win, then it's like, well, why didn't you move them around at the end of the season? But then if they move them around and then they lose, then it's like, why'd you move them around at the end of the season?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's all a guessing game. You know who's had to do a lot of guessing in their life? Crispy. He will join us now. I am surprised after the way he killed it on TV the other night that Crispy wants to come down from his high and mighty perch and hang out with us. But he is right here, and he will join us next. Meanwhile, Belmont is down by three in a dogfight, and Maryland's going to the free throw line to make it four. With 1:41 to go. So that's not good. That is not good at all. Jared the GM, Crispy, going to join us next. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared the GM are live at Bridgestone Arena. The Preds play tonight against Pittsburgh. And joining us now out of the TV booth for the first time in what, 5 years?
I'm busy. Excuse me, you're talking to me? I'm watching my team Belmont, okay, you're guys? Okay, I'm watching my
building.
Team Belmont. Leave me alone for a second, will you please? I'm not in a good mood right now.
Hey, so now Crispy
but
does
to answer
TV,
your, but to answer
and now he's become a total diva. I see how it is.
One action back. You know what, though? It was a great walk down memory lane for us. Like I said earlier, I thank all the people that allowed us to do it, and Mason Willie loaned us their booth for the night. It was enjoyable, and Pete and I had a lot of fun. And one of the nicest parts of the night was not only doing the game, but meeting all the people that were there for 21 years.
Oh,
been there 21
yeah.
years yeah. on that one. So.
I thought it was great. What a great concept, great idea.
You know, whoever did it, it was nice for us and nice of everybody to chip in and give it to us. But I guess they said, oh, those two curmudgeons there, Statler and Waldorf, put them up there once more in the balcony. And then,
you guys had a
what
good
you doing
time.
Down there?
I know.
So I was talking to my dad about it, too. And I said, Crispy probably loved doing it. But if you told Crispy, hey, the next trip is to Winnipeg and you're on it, he's probably out.
Oh, my back. My back's sore. My back's sore.
Crispy, what do we make of the winning streak? Because we're kind of like, I think they've turned a corner. But then as soon as I start to get excited about the idea of them turning a corner, I get worried about the, you know, every time you start to feel comfortable about this team, they go out there and they get their brains kicked in and you're like, oh, it's so, and that's the frustrating part of the season. Do you think they've turned a corner? What do you make of the winning streak?
Partially. I was listening to you guys coming in, and I agree with the GM. I like what I see, the progress we're making. But in my mind and in my heart, we are not where we should be or could be or will be, hopefully, going into the playoffs. Because what we're up against this year, it's a tougher division. Let's face it. And playoffs are going to be that little much tougher. And if we play our game, we can run with the best of them. But I still think that we have another little gear to hit. To do, and I want to see it.
What has to happen over the next 2.5 weeks of the season for you to feel comfortable going into the playoffs?
Okay. I want to see Boyle play a lot. I want to see Simmons play a lot, and I want to see Cody McLeod in our lineup for certain teams we have to meet. That's going to give a lot of our guys some jam and some get up and go to them. But the best part I want to see is get back to what Coach Lav and his guys taught you last year and get back to what they taught you when you went to the finals. Listen to what they're saying to you. Don't try and freewheel it out there. We got too many guys at certain times of the game are going to try and be the Lone Ranger, and they're going to take one hand and go down the ice and make it 8-10-foot pass. What's with this 300-foot pass and 150-foot passes, and all I see out of that is bounced off the stick down to their goalie. He gives it to them. Down they come. Let's get back to we carry the puck with possession, with a mission.
In your mind, what was the biggest these last couple of games against pretty good playoff caliber teams and to come out with wins and it appeared to me more consistency? You know, it wasn't the peaks and the valleys. It was kind of, you know, there were little dips and there were a little hill, but just kind of pretty. Why?
You know, the biggest thing is I think, and I'm going to go back to it again. You guys said it. Goaltending. Both Pekka and Saros have saved our bacon numerous, numerous times. Yeah. And then suddenly what happened was not only were they saving it, but when they did have a rebound getaway or a scramble around, we were putting up a better wall. We were clearing loose pucks a whole lot better than we had been. And 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, every loose puck seemed to end up near the team's stick. Every loose puck seemed to be a second, third shot on our goaltending. I think in the last four games, we've started to clean up that area. And that's the one area that you have to clean up. Your goaltender is going to make that first save for you most times. Most times. A lot of times he needs help. That's when the help has to step in. And I think that's one of the key factors right now we're seeing our team start to do better.
We were talking earlier, when you look at the Eastern Division and the top six teams there, all of those teams have more points than the Preds. Why is that? They play each other. You think they would knock each other off and bang each other around? Are they just because the Preds, it's like we were talking, I mean, we play those teams, we swept them all.
You know what it is? Just about. It's wide open hockey. It's firebrand hockey in the East. In the East, if you're going to survive there, you better have wheels and you better be on the attack. They're coming at you. Every team there explodes, opens up on you. The West, I think in my mind only, it's just me, is a little tougher, a little more grinding, a little more pounding. You pay a little extra around the net. You pay a little extra to get over the blue line. And when I used to coach junior, we used to go against the East and the West. The West was always tough, physical. The East was flying, wide open. Kitty, we'll give you 6 goals, but we'll take 7 or 8 on you. Mm. And sometimes in the East, you notice, okay, as long as I score one more than you, I'm happy with the game.
Terry Crisp is with us. Do you feel like this Pittsburgh team, I mean, it's funny, I don't feel the same juice around Pittsburgh as I have in years past. Now, they're not defending cup champions like they were the last 2 years. And yet, I still feel like when it comes with the Eastern Conference, Tampa's run away with it. But in the playoffs, Boston, Toronto, Washington, Pittsburgh, and Tampa are all in this jar. And I feel like if you put their names in the jar and you shook it up and you put a hand in the jar and you pulled a name out of the jar, it could be any one of those teams that could win the Eastern Conference.
It could be a legit pull. You're right, it could be.
Is Pittsburgh still, like, do we look at tonight? Can we look at tonight as kind of a measuring stick kind of game?
Yeah, exactly. I always call it, remember, I've sat here before and told you, you've had litmus tests. Okay, Anaheim, put it away. L.A. King, should have beat them. I mean, they're bottom feeder. Went into San Jose and played a great game. Solid hockey. That's what I loved about what I see now. Tonight, are we going to be Anaheim or are we going to be San Jose game? That's what I want to see tonight. I want 2 points. I don't want to be dropping down into the wild card race, which, if you look at the standings, anything is wide open still. So don't tell me that this is settled, except the top, whatever. And tonight, we come out and we prove to ourselves, never mind Pittsburgh and anybody else, but to ourselves and the guys in that room, you know what? We're back, boys. We're legit. Our game is here. Everybody will feel better.
We've been talking about the second line with the way they put it together now and how well it seems to be doing with Sissons in there in that group on such a short period of time. Tourist is now kind of relegated to the fourth. Do you keep it that way?
Yeah, if it's winning,
coach.
If you're winning, sure do. You don't tamper with it. And you make a change for the first reason to do it. So why would you make a change? And, you know, a lot of times it's not easy for a coach. And it's not easy for a player like a Tourist who's regular play and whatnot and those guys to adjust it. But if you win, that's the purpose of making the change, to win. So until you don't win, Why would you change it? Why would you fool around with the structure of it? And the guys in that dressing room know it better than anybody. Every guy that pulls that jersey on should know it.
Oh, yeah.
Terry Crispy is with us. How about the play of Rene the other night? We had talked about, we've talked for weeks, Crispy, about, you know, the stats are saying Soros is doing this and Soros is doing that. Rene goes out there and puts up a shutout against Toronto, has an amazing save in the third period. And I wonder for you, how much do you look at his performance against Toronto and credit the defense for how well they played, and look at maybe some of the games where he gave up two or three goals, where had he had a similar defensive effort in front of him, he also would have put out a shutout.
As we were talking earlier, and GM was asking me about doing that and cleaning up, I mean, it's like a vacuum cleaner, sweeping, cleaning up in front of the net. That's what the defensemen are there for. That's what your goal tender is there for. Most goalies can make that first stop, unless it's the blazer or the screen or whatever. But they're going to need help. I don't care who goalie you're talking about. There's going to be loose pucks. This is where, when Lav keeps saying one-on-one battles, it doesn't always necessarily mean one-on-one wide open, one-on-one in a corner. It means who's going to pay a price to get that loose puck in front of your goaltender to clear it.
With we brought in all the new guys, and we see, you know, Boyle really, I think, is doing a good job playing well, you know, considering everything. And then, like, Grenland, some of those guys, maybe not quite. Is that because of position, adjustment? What is the
attitude.
Difference?
Attitude. Boyle came here with an attitude. You know what his attitude was? I'm being traded to a good team. They play. I want to make them a better team. It took him a while to adjust. Now that he's adjusted, he's playing with an attitude. And I think, in my mind only, that attitude that Boyle has carries over into the dressing room.
Oh,
I think he's one of the guys now standing up saying, I've been through it. I've seen it. I'm blessed to be playing still. And let's get this thing. Because if you want to hear, listen to some of the interviews of the guys like a Boyle and like a Neckholm and like a Yossi and Bonino. I love listening to these guys after a game, and especially after a loss. They tell you like it is, and they tell you what they're feeling. And if they take that feeling from there to the dressing room, that's what I'm looking for all the time.
Well, I was really pleased the other night when he scored the goal, the way the team responded to him scoring. You know?
Simmons?
You can always tell. Well, yeah. Simmons, too. Simmons was so excited, he was ready to wet himself. I said he was so – I thought it was great. You know, I love that kind of enthusiasm.
That's what you're looking for, passion, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Get that monkey off my back. But when we made these trades, to me, we got eight games, whatever. But where I think they're going to pay dividends, Boyle, Simmons, McLeod coming into our lineup, is in playoffs. These are the bodies that are going to be pounded. Remember I keep saying your Clydesdales – then the last round are there, second last round are there. Your little thoroughbreds are getting pounded out on it. Mm-hmm. This is what we brought them in for. This is what I'm looking from them.
Terry Crisp is with us. Take us through the discussions with Turris. Turris kind of came out over the weekend and said, you know, I think I can be out there and help the team if I can play my game. And then David Poile went on the midday show and said, you know, there's probably been a little bit of a disagreement with how Turris has seen it and how the team has seen it. And we all know how this works. The player always looks at it like, and I'm not picking on Turris here, considering that I have picked on Turris a lot. I'm not picking on Turris here, but you know how it is. The player looks at it and says, man, if they could just let me play my game, I know I'm good enough to do this. I've done it before. I can do it. They just need to let me do that. And then the coach comes to you and is like, hey, you're not playing well enough. I'm benching you. It's like, wait a minute. I'm a $6 million guy. I've done this for a reason. You got to let me play my way back into being me. How worried as a coach would you be about maybe the negativity there affecting the room, and how would you handle this situation?
Not at
if
all.
You're Peter,
not at all.
Because
you just said a thing I remember. For the praise that sticks in my mind is I have to play my game. So if he's in my office, well, son, what is your game then? Tell me. I've been coaching you now for 50 games, 60 games. What the heck is your game? Well, we're having problems here communicating. Tell me what it is. What do you need? And if he tells you what his game is, and say, okay, you're in. Is this your game? Are you a smoothie? Are you a grinder? Are you a goal scorer? Are you a back checker, penalty killer, power play? When he says, I got to play my game, all well and good. But there's 19 other guys dressed with you.
Yeah.
You're going to play your game and let the other 19. This is what I used to say to a player. I'll tell you a quick story. I got time for it. I was coaching. This player wasn't playing his game. He comes in to see me before one of the games. Can I talk to you, coach? God, break my rule. Yeah, come on in. Why am I not playing? I said, you know, every night we sit in this dressing room, we as coaches, and we put up a lineup together for how we can lose the game that night. So, yeah. No, we do. We sit there and really say, how can we lose this game? Let's put a lineup that's going to cause us. Well, you're stupid. You know how you're I said, well, what you're asking me is sort of dumb. But I said, what do you take? He said, I'm better than some of the guys you're dressing. I'm better. I could do more than the team. You're better. Yeah, I am. So it's just before a game. I said to him, okay, let you and I walk down to the dressing room. I'll walk in and call all the guys into the dressing room. And I'll say, listen, so-and-so thinks that he should dress tonight. He's better than some of the guys that are who wants to sit out tonight and give him a chance to play? Guy looked at me and said, well, that's not right. That's your job. I said, yeah, that's my job, and I'm doing my job. End of discussion. He leaves. I'm sitting there after both of us here. Oh, this kid just missed a big opportunity. Imagine if he said, okay,
sure,
let's go down. You know there's always one clown in there that's going to stand up and say, I'll take the night off. Oh,
yeah. I said, be your best player.
He could have had me on the he could have had me on the ringer and didn't pull it.
Terry Crisp, as always, last one for you, Crispy. What is the big thing tonight? What is – because I'm trying to figure out. I feel like tonight's a big game, but I can't put my finger on it as to why tonight's
okay,
a big
game. I want the 2 points. Number one, I want 2 points. But what I'm really looking for now is I want a full game. You give me a full game, I'll live with the end of the game.
Yeah.
But when you come off that ice and I'm happy with what I've seen and you're happy and the coaches – we'll work from there. We'll get there. Of course I want 2 points. But you know what I want more than anything? I want to see 20 guys cohesively working out there as much as they've got. I want every guy hitting the end boards. I want every guy hitting the slots. I want every guy taking. And when they come off the ice, I want every guy having been knocked down once. Get knocked down once for a one-on-one battle, you're telling me you're in the game for 60 minutes.
And if they play like that, they'll win enough of the
sure
games
they will.
Anyway.
Sure they will. Our skill level is good enough that it'll come to the top.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrence Arthur Crisp, the man. He will be back on the pregame show tonight on Fox Sports Tennessee. Crispy, good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Crispy.
And I missed you guys, by the way.
You were out on your snowmobile out in Calgary. You were having a great
time. That's it. You called last time a snowmobile. That was great.
Belmont loses a heartbreaker. We got to get to that next, and we will. Jared and the GM, our reaction to the Belmont loss is next. It's ESP at 102.5 The Game. Belmont lost, Floyd. I don't want to say Belmont blew it or Belmont choked, because once you say that, it's like it's negative. But they blew it, Floyd. They had their chance. And they blew it. They should have beaten Maryland. They should have beaten Maryland. Belmont loses to Maryland 79-77. Outscored 45-37 in the second half. Floyd, what did you think?
You know what? I mean, it was the game went back and forth. There were runs on both sides. You know, you'd look down one time, one team would be up by 7 or 9, and then you look down and it'd be tied. And the truth is, nobody could pull away. I think Maryland, who it seemed like couldn't hit a three in the first half, started hitting threes in the second half, and the opposite was true, you know, for Belmont. And so that made it tough. I mean, there were a couple of golden opportunities. They just, you know, couldn't put it away.
It's easy to second guess the coach. And it's not that I want to second-guess the coach, but I'm going to second-guess the coach, because I was thinking this as it happened at the end of the game. Belmont has possession of the basketball, down by one with the shot clock off, and Rick Bird, with a timeout, holds it for the last shot. Now, you know, the common strategy in basketball is to not worry about the last shot. The common strategy is to go attack the basket, because you know they're not going to foul you. So you attack the basket, and if they foul you, you go to the free throw line, but you try to score so that, you know, you score with 17 seconds left, and then you try to play defense and win the game. And Belmont didn't do that. Belmont just kind of stood out there, and they took the time off the clock, and then they took their last attempt, and they tried to run a play. You could tell it was a set that they had practiced, which is why Rick Bird didn't call timeout, which is another thing that I have issue with, is I think Rick Bird should have called timeout. But the freshman guard picks up his dribble and then just kind of throws it, and the cut wasn't open. But because he had picked up his dribble, he didn't have any options in terms of what to do. And I think, one, I think they should have attacked to start. They should not have tried to run down the clock, because if you attack to start down by one, you give yourself a chance. Even if you miss it, you can foul, and you'll still get a chance to shoot a three. I also thought Rick Bird should have called timeout. Had he wanted to set up for the last shot of the game, he should have called timeout, and he should have gotten his team together, drawn up the play that he wanted, and just made sure that everybody was on the same page. Because if you're going to take it down to the last shot at the end of the game, what do you need to hold on to your timeout for?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you don't need it. I don't know, you know, if he should have or shouldn't have. Or I mean, I don't. To me, I'm going to guess this, and I'm going to guess it's similar to football from this standpoint, that they have had extensive meetings on how you handle situations like that, and not everybody handles them the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody will say, well, you know, no, I want to be able to get to the last shot, or like you said, maybe I don't care about the last shot.
Or maybe we've practiced this play so many times.
Yeah, I mean, what everybody
understands. That I don't want Maryland to set up their defense, so I don't want to call the timeout to give them the opportunity.
All that could be true. Yeah.
I can see the whole thought process the whole way. I just always feel like if you're going to hold for the last shot. Now, maybe this is just the control freak in me, because, like, Roy Williams doesn't call timeouts in those kind of situations either. It drives me – Roy Williams refuses to call timeout. It drives me nuts. But I don't know. I just feel more comfortable with the coach putting in what he wants to put in during the timeout. That's why you have the timeout. And obviously Belmont had a play drawn up that they wanted to run, and it just, you know, the guy didn't come off the cut. The guy picks up his dribble. Once he picks up his dribble, everybody knows he's dead meat, and that was the tough part for Belmont in that situation. Not second-guessing the coach. I mean, Rick Bird is a great coach, and he's coached so many games in his career that obviously he has a certain way that he's going to want to go about doing this.
Right.
That's not how I would have done it. And when I saw them, you know, Crispy was talking, but when they took the ball and had about 20 seconds and they're bringing it up down by a point, I'm sitting there doing this with my hands, the timeout motions. Hey, call timeout, timeout. And that's how I would have done it. Obviously, that's not how Rick Bird wanted to do it. And Belmont ends up losing. And I have to take the blame for Belmont losing, because
guaranteed.
I did call it at halftime.
Guaranteed.
I did call it, and I said they were going to win.
Keeping
and
track of these, Ian.
They should have won.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say they choked, because, you know, when it's the little guys out there, when it's the Belmonts, it's the little guys out there, you want to root for them. You don't want to get on them. Like, if the Vols did this, they choked. If the Titans did it, they choked. If the Preds did it, they choked. But, you know, when it's the little guys that we all root for, you don't want to get on them for that. You want to congratulate Belmont on a great season, which Belmont had.
Oh, fantastic.
So you don't want to get on Belmont. But then you look at the game and you're like, ah, you had it right there. You had it on so many levels. And what I tell you, the first 3 minutes of the second half were going to tell us the game, and Maryland came right back on a big run to start the half and finished the half on a big run. And it's hard to win in college basketball when you don't take control of the game when the opportunity is there for you to take control of it. So with that, let's load them up. Your thoughts on Belmont, that's going to be part of Ask the GM, too. So it's Ask the GM / Reaction to Belmont. Your thoughts on the Belmont loss, 615-737-1025, plus your questions for Floyd, 615-737-1025. Everything is on the table for Ask the GM, presented by Pella Windows of Nashville, basketball, football, hockey. If you want to talk about Ichiro with Floyd, I'm sure Floyd has some thoughts on Ichiro as well. And so we'll get into all of that. And so 615-737-1025 is the number, 615-737-1025. And the best call, and these include the Belmont calls, the best call will receive KISS tickets on April 9th at Bridgestone Arena. That's a pair of tickets to see KISS on April 9th at Bridgestone Arena. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 1025 The Game.